Hi everyone, how we doing?
Hello everyone.
I'm Yahtzee Croshaw. Welcome to Slightly Something Else. I'm joined by Matty Sleaver.
Hello.
And today we're talking about the lost art of the video game demo. It just came up on Twitter as I was tweeting it out. Mm-hmm. So I'll just retweet that. And I swear also, we didn't know Frost was doing a video on this.
No, and also we wanted to do this topic we had planned to do, I think like before you went to Milwaukee, because it kind of sparked after the Resident Evil 4 demo, before that game released, the Resident Evil 4 remake demo.
It's
a happy coincidence.
We have this list of topics that we keep coming back to, and this is one that keeps coming up. I guess it's on a lot of people's minds. Maybe a lot of people are thinking, boy, I wish there'd been a demo of Jedi Survivor so we'd know if a PC could run the fucking thing.
Rest in peace, PC gamers. We hardly knew you.
Well, I don't blame PC gamers as much as I blame the obligation for every game to have absolute cutting-edge tech in the AAA space, at least. Which will be a topic in an upcoming extra punctuation, incidentally, but yes.
What if a week before every game came out, they delayed it a week, and then the game just released with like all those patches in it? I think that's
Then that 1 week after release launch date would become the de facto launch date.
No!
The same thing would happen.
No,
people would go, we don't need to fix it. The actual release date isn't a week from now. We'll be fine.
All right, you found the holes in my logic. Also, Nick wanted me to remind everyone, thank you to everyone thank you everyone for your donations, your super chats, your Patreon memberships. We're gonna have a big Patreon update soon with all the cool things we've been working on. So,
oh, cool.
If you wanna get in on that, make sure you are there over at Patreon.
I noticed we've got a new goal at the top of the stream page there, exploring the Zelda series with Jesse and KC. It says
Jesse is a complete Zelda novice,
and he calls himself a video game reviewer.
He asked me, he's like, where should I start? I think Jesse's original plan was to start with Tears of the Kingdom and then the original Zelda on NES. And I was like, respectfully.
And presumably you reacted the same way I reacted when you said you were going to play Half-Life Black Mesa before the original.
I feel like that's a taste of my own medicine.
Okay.
Good also, thing. I know this isn't in the topic of demos. Ravenholm, delightful. What a time we had.
Yeah, it was
really good.
A classic moment in FPS storytelling, that.
People got mad because Casey and I kept saying they were stealing things from Dark Souls in the level. And people were not happy with that, let me tell you.
Well, they wouldn't. But yes, demos. I think you and I are of an age where we remember when demos were much more prevalent practice in the world of video games.
Yeah, absolutely.
Certainly I remember the days when you get demo discs on the front of magazines. I remember buying Commodore format with a little demo cassette tape. You'd have to press play on the tape to play the first demo. And then if you wanted to play the second demo, you just had to press play again. So if you only wanted to play like the third demo on the tape, you had to play through three other things to get to it.
That's funny. You like had to literally go through them. You couldn't just like go to a menu and skip around.
Analog media, bitches.
What a time to be alive.
And it certainly gave you a lot of opportunities to play games you wouldn't normally have tried.
Yeah, and it was harder to just come across games. Like, I know this is going to sound like old men yelling at cloud, but like people now just have infinite free games to play. And that wasn't the case at the time. And so, I have fond memories of tethering them with magazines as well. Like the PS1 and Dreamcast era, those official magazines every month coming with a disc and being excited to see what was on the next one.
Well, even in this age where ostensibly everything's available to everyone at all times, we still have new methods of curation.
We do,
things aren't being curated for us by like demo disc compilers on magazines anymore, but there's still like a narrow selection of things people are being exposed to, either through following their favorite reviewers or video game let's players, or just hearing things on the grapevine generally.
And there's people like Frost who like his one of his areas of strength is checking out games in early access, checking out demos, and sort of, being able to dip his finger in the pie and let people know if this thing's ready or not.
Yeah,
I don't know if that made sense. He should get his fingers out of pies though. That's nice.
Early access certainly a much more prevalent thing than demos these days, but not quite serving the same purpose.
No.
I mean, the old point of demos was to advertise the game, to say, hey, this is the game we're going to make. Here's a chance to play a little bit of it so you can tell if you'd like to play the rest of it.
Yeah, and I think it was important. The ones that really stick out to me were demos for games that I either knew nothing about, games that were kind of uncharting new territory, or games that really had something to prove. Like, it never felt like I needed a demo for like the next installment in a franchise. It was more of like, oh, this is a thing. This is a completely unknown quantity to me. Let me see what this thing is.
Yeah, I mean, more than once, I will download a free demo on Steam if I have a vague interest, but aren't sure if it's for me.
Yep.
That's the fundamental purpose. And it's a shame that it's not really an obligation of games these days. I mean, these days, all you'll need to get is trailers. And I've often made the case that that's fine. Trailers are fine for movies because, you know, all you're going to be doing is sitting and watching. It's just a little snaffle smackerel of what you're going to be sitting and watching. Mm-hmm. But if you can't get your hands on the core gameplay loop, how do you even know you're getting something good?
Yeah, a lot of some folks were chatting before we went live in YouTube about how you don't need demos today because you have access to, streamers playing the whole game, or you can watch full walkthroughs of the game. But while that serves one purpose, I think no amount of watching someone play a game can form an opinion quite like getting hands on with yourself. It is a medium that you kind of need to be played. Like, no amount of listening to us jibber jabbering can help inform your opinion quite like getting hands on with the game yourself.
I mean, that's why publishers came around to Let's Plays and walkthroughs on YouTube. At first, they were sort of clamped down on that because, for the obvious reason that, hey, if someone watches the whole game on YouTube, what reason have they to actually buy it?
Yeah.
But it turns out people still bought games if they saw it on YouTube because, you know, if you're sitting watching someone play a game, what's the first thing that crosses your mind? Hey, can I have a go?
Exactly. Someone's like, it's like watching someone go on a roller coaster. And you're like, well, that's neat. I would also like to go on that roller coaster.
And if a game is so cutscene heavy that you get the full experience watching YouTube, then that's on you as a game designer, if you ask me.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that. I have fond memories of, especially in the 90s, and I believe Frost even mentions this in his cult take available to members now, of all places, probably the demo disc that sticks with me the most came from Pizza Hut. Pizza Hut here in the States, for some reason, had a partnership with Nintendo and released a handful of PS1 demo discs.
PS1 demo discs. I had like a wardrobe full of those like plain black discs in little like flimsy jewel cases. Or just the little plastic sleeves.
Yeah, it was weird. Like, I don't know why. I don't know why that happened. Like, what kind of a partnership that was. But I remember there was like, they would have like whatever the new Crash Bandicoot game was. They had like Final Fantasy VIII. But the one that always sticks out to me is the original Tony Hawk's Pro Skater. And when I was talking earlier about kind of a mission statement demo, that's what that felt to me, because there were skateboarding games beforehand. There was like Skate or Die and stuff on the NES, but Tony Hawk, like, they've really kind of uncharted new territory there, and that game was this weird mishmash of puzzle game and fighter and platformer, and getting hands-on with like a 2-minute demo that looped the same Goldfinger song in the warehouse over and over. I played that thing hours upon hours, and that just sold me on an entirely new genre of game.
I did wonder why the thumbnail of today's podcast depicted us riding skateboards. That felt a little incongruous, but suddenly it all becomes clear.
There you go. I like just letting our great artist Pad Manathan just kind of go wild with it. Be like, here's three games, just do whatever the hell you want with it.
It feels like they put Resident Evil 4 in there the last 5 weeks.
That's because I really like Resident Evil 4. Hey, when we choose topic, throw out some games. I'll put it. You were always talking about Commodore 64. I don't know what kind of games are on there.
Maybe I will.
Ooh.
So, why do you think demos are no longer prevalent, dare I say, obligatory?
Yeah. It feels like we hit an apex point in the 360 generation when Microsoft mandated that every game have a demo of some sort.
Yeah.
They said every game, whether it's a digital download indie or a big AAA summer release, had to have a downloadable demo. And it felt like that almost like caused the bubble to burst. And I don't know if publishers got mad at that or what happened, but it feels like after that, they demos kind of started to slowly fade away.
I think at that time, it was slightly less convenient to download stuff. Download speeds weren't so great. And if you were going to put in the time and commitment to download something, I guess people felt more inclined to just download the whole game.
Yeah, I guess that, yeah. And there's also the...
Oftentimes a demo would still need to like have the engine and everything in there, so it would might not require that much extra space to download the whole game.
And there is there's always the argument that the time it takes for, like, you know, because a demo, if you look at a demo from the outside perspective, it might be you're like, oh, just take a slice of this and put it there. Like, what? That's no extra work. But the time and resources it takes away from development, I think a lot of publishers and developers would rather just spend that polishing the game. And I know you heard that a lot at like E3 demos, how publishers are like, this is single-handedly setting the game back because we have to crunch and focus on this tiny vertical slice of a demo to show people as opposed to continuing to work on the final game. So I don't know if that kind of pushback led to part of it.
Well, they still have to do that. It's just the demo is reserved for conventions and showing to journalists.
Yeah, yeah. But there's also, again, there's a difference in demo of we're showing it off on stage and we know it will only be played by a developer compared to it's out in the wild. Anyone can touch it.
Anyone can try to run it and watch with dismay when their PC fucks it up.
I do like, going back to the Jedi Survivor thing, it is funny. It sucks for anyone who paid money for a game that isn't working well. But it is funny that it seems to be working worse the better the PC you have.
Interesting.
It's like a real kind of eat the rich scenario there.
It annoys me because it was the PS5 version that Nick got me to try out, so I reviewed that, and that wasn't very buggy at all. So now my review won't be referencing that at all, but maybe that's for the best.
But the problem is it's buggy not like in a week. Like, I think they just announced they're releasing a patch this week, so I don't know. If your review just highlighted bugs anyway, and then they get fixed in a week, you know, that's kind of the weird thing about reviews that are they're kind of locked to a very specific moment in time.
That's the problem with criticizing a game for being buggy these days.
Yeah,
they just fix it in post.
Yeah, and bugs are, you know, you're a bug you get that doesn't necessarily mean someone else is going to get it. So it's
Well, maybe I'll download the PC version on Steam for the post CP stream, and we can see how well it does on my extremely top of the range PC that the company paid for.
That's a very good idea. I like that. Demos also, to me, they served a purpose for a little while as kind of they Trojan horsed a demo in another game. So they kind of got you to like eat your vegetables by giving you the dessert of something you were really looking forward to. A couple that stick out to me, Square Enix did this a lot during the PS1 era where they like Parasite Eve was a new IP for them. They kind of an unknown game. They packaged it with a demo disc that had stuff like Xenogears and Final Fantasy VIII. But the one that really sticks out to me is Konami's Zone of the Enders, which came with the first playable demo for Metal Gear Solid 2.
Ah, yes, famously.
A small slice of that opening.
Famously, the very misleading demo of Metal Gear Solid 2 that
it was.
Led people to the understandable conclusion that you play as Solid Snake throughout the whole thing, like you did the first game. And then
you play for him throughout the first hour.
And then discovered to their dismay that they have to step into the shoes of a twinkie girly man.
Who everyone now loves. Ryan's retribution is finally
complete. They had to basically saw his head off and attach it to RoboCop to make everyone like him. I mean, that would work for any character, surely.
Even the most hated character. Love you, Ryan. But Microsoft did that again later on with the first Crackdown when it came out. It had a demo, I believe, for the Halo 3 beta. And that was back when Halo was like, prime Halo. That was back when Halo was at the...
This is like... very, very comparable to the practice of sticking hot trailers onto an otherwise not that interesting film.
Yep.
I mean, wasn't it the case that I remember hearing a story that when Kevin Smith was making Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, he has a very dedicated fan base, or he did at the time, apparently. When he put like the first trailer for that movie in some other movie, a lot of his fans would just go to that movie and then leave after the trailers because they just wanted to see the Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back trailer.
Yeah, and I guess that was, again, before the... It feels like trailers as well as demos kind of had they were worth more in the pre-internet, have infinite information at your fingertips. Yeah, I literally remember going to see Meet Joe Black in order to see the Phantom Menace trailer.
It's sort of that's where it premiered. Yeah, isn't that kind of an admission that the game you're hiding the demo in isn't that great? Saying, "Hey, come and look at this. Perhaps it could." Remind you of a completely different, much better game.
I think it's less... I feel like the pessimist would say it's an admission of that, whereas the optimist in me says, well, we don't know if this new thing is going to have the weight to get people's attention, so we'll sprinkle on this thing that's familiar with them. No one knows what Zone of the Enders is, but people like Metal Gear Solid. No one knows what Crackdown is, but people like Halo, so... I like to think that it's a positive and not a negative.
I suppose
it's probably a negative.
You know, another reason I've thought of the demos might be less prevalent is because of the lack of innovation in AAA games these days. Since a lot of them, I've often said, are sort of flat packed from pre-existing engines, pre-existing gameplay mechanics, pre-existing art engines.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the times, if you just say to people, hey, this is another game that's like X, Y, and Z, people will go, okay, guess I'll buy it then. Because people know what to expect now. And your demos, as well as being, you know, a sales pitch, it is precisely that. It is a pitch, potentially, for the ideas of the game. Saying, hey, let's see if this works. And you don't really need to do that for a gear grindy copy-paste shooter. Because we know it works. We're just doing that again.
Yeah, and especially the franchises that we see time and time again. Like, do you really need an Assassin's Creed demo for the new Assassin's Creed game or the new Call of Duty? Like,
well, that's
these things are such known quantities.
Well, I don't think I need a demo for those games, but then I already know I'm going to play them because it's my job.
Yeah.
So you might want to put that question to someone for whom it is not their job.
So do you think do you think, like, what is the range of what a demo can do? So do you think a good demo can help move sales of a game? And do you think a bad demo could tank a game?
Well, I presume that's another reason we don't see it so much because people might have, as we say, might have known ahead of time that Jedi Survivor is kind of janky on PC. So yeah, it could certainly damage potential sales if people got the skinny early on that it wasn't that great.
Yeah.
But surely if the obligation to put a demo out there, that would motivate people to make sure their games were good, theoretically.
When I see a demo get released, especially for a bigger game, indies kind of an entirely different conversation. But for a big game, when I see a demo released pre-release, I generally think that the developer and publisher feel strongly about the game. I think that they know they have something good on their hands. So the Resident Evil 4 remake which showcased just the opening little village shootout, I think they knew. That their game looked good and played good, and people by and large like it.
So. Putting out a demo like that for marketing purposes, not because of early access purposes where you're trying to squash bugs, but to put out a demo like that does reflect confidence on the part of the publisher. It's just usually a good sign. Even more so if you drop a game with no hype at all, as in Hi-Fi Rush situation.
Yeah.
That's a very good sign for the confidence the publisher has in the game.
Yeah. Speaking of dropping a game with no hype, probably the last demo that like really stuck with me was PT, which was released. I mean, which I guess is a demo. I don't know what we'd call that thing, but
you know, PT that was sort of. It's almost lucky that Silent Hills didn't actually have to follow up that demo because that was such a strong demo. But I don't think you could get a full game out of it. You couldn't. Extrapolate into a full game. You couldn't really say, let's take this and expand it into 6 hours to make a game. because that wouldn't
also
really, it
the
was
game
a good...
wouldn't be that because like the demo ends with the reveal that it's Norman Reedus, and so the game would have at the very least been third person. Right?
The game absolutely would not have been that. That was just it wasn't even like a proof of concept. It was really just a marketing trailer.
Yeah, a playable teaser. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the one that really kind of stood out to me. I remember it was debuted. It was one of those "and it's out now" things at like a Gamescom showcase, and so it was like, I think it was whatever, like the morning in Germany, so it was the middle of the night in the U.S. And I just like woke up to messages of, so it turns out this horror demo is actually a Silent Hill teaser, and I was like, what the fuck is this thing? Like, how is this possible?
But the other thing is that a demo can be something fun. It can be like an aside thing.
That
can be a fun thing. Because I remember the first time I saw something like this, this was back on the Amiga. I got an Amiga magazine, and on the cover disc was a demo for Flight of the Amazon Queen, which was a point-and-click adventure game made by a Brisbane studio, actually. And later in life, I actually got friendly with the original creators of that game. And
that's cool.
They were some pretty close chums of mine while I lived there.
Nice.
But the original demo of Flight of the Amazon Queen wasn't actually part of the game. It was was you playing a journalist. You were playing the main character of the game, but in the role of a journalist, going to visit the studio where the game was being made. And you had conversations with the creators as they were like painting backdrops.
That's clever.
And they told you about what they were going to do in the game, and they pitched the story, and you got to see some of the art.
Yeah.
That sort of set visit context. And it was fun. It was a fun thing to do.
Yeah. See, that's one of those that when we talked earlier how some AAA developers and studios don't want to take time away from the final product, like that is the epitome of taking away from the final product, and having something that exists on its own as opposed to just being a small slice of something else. I know Stanley Parable did that. Jedi Outcast had a demo that was a level that wasn't in the game. I was reading, apparently the first Half-Life had kind of like a tech demo that was like, here's, you know, futz around with the...
Oh, yes, sort of... Half-Life Uplink. Maybe we got you to play that as well. Because that was a completely separate campaign to the actual game. Which doesn't feature at any point in the course of the actual game.
And, no.
There was Space Quest 6 did that as well, of all the things I could pull out of my memory. Like the demo, it used some of the like the rooms and some of the things that were set up for the actual game, but it was a completely separate story for the main character.
Yeah, and we still get those occasionally, like in terms of relatively recent big AAA things. 7 years ago or so, Final Fantasy 15 released a sort of prologue demo called Episode Duskai that was... that it was like its own kind of separate little prologue with an area and combat, and you got a little feel for the characters and the story and the gameplay and everything. So it feels like we get fewer and fewer of those. However, demos seem to have morphed into something else entirely. And part of it is the nature of services like Game Pass or PlayStation Plus with free trials, or publishers like Square Enix that, at least on Switch, a lot of their games they'll release, you can download and play the first X hours of, and then you hit a certain point and you can choose to buy it and your progress will just carry over. So I did that with like Dragon Quest XI, that's available with stuff like Octopath and Live Alive, which I think is a pretty cool way to, you know, you're not gonna do that with probably a proper Final Fantasy game, but you know, you'll do that with kind of a smaller, more unknown thing.
Yeah, but with the fact that there are so many options for games we could just play right now on Game Pass or whatever.
Yeah.
And even cases of like free-to-play games that you just start playing right now in full, there's less and less ways for a demo to motivate the user to give it a try. It says, hey, we could just get what we want from all this free stuff. Why would we waste time with a demo?
Yeah. And I think that's... The games that really need to prove themselves with demos are now indie games. I feel like indie games, especially indies that have are trying to do something new or do something different, can really benefit from a demo whether it's part of Steam Next Fest or a demo that's just released to the public, that's like, oh shit, this is something neat.
Well, like I said, I've done that more than once quite recently. I'll be looking at an interesting idea on Steam and it'll say, hey, play the free demo, and I will. Mm-hmm. And I said, don't mind if I do. Let's see if you pull it off.
Yeah, I just last week they dropped the demo for that game Viewfinder, which I think you guys got to play at GDC.
Yes. I was pretty excited about that. That's got some pretty impressive tech, although it's a sort of, what was that game? A game where you could change the superliminal, where you could change the sizes of things by changing your perspective. It's that sort of thing where if you see it in action, it absolutely blows your mind.
Yep.
But there's absolutely nothing it could do besides one game.
Yeah.
It doesn't couldn't really apply the technology to something else.
Yeah, one of the things that, again, Viewfinder, folks, you could download the Steam demo now. One of the things that impressed me the most was I feel like with every puzzle, I was like, this is really clever, but this has to be the extent of the idea. And then they kept kind of adding more ideas to it. And I was like, this is really, like, I don't know if the glue is going to be there at the end of the day for the finished product, but like I thought the demo was just really confident and really impressed me.
It's a great tech demo, but the holy grail for that sort of thing is that it demonstrates some kind of tech that every AAA game wants to have as part of their game after that. I mean, stuff like the portal technology.
That
was actually introduced in Prey 2006, but which was used to great effect in Narbacular Drop. And then Valve came along and said, hey, that's great, let's make Portal out of it. Shit like the superliminal thing and the Viewfinder thing, it couldn't really just like drop it as part of like a big old AAA game.
Yeah, and I think part of what makes it confusing with AAA games now is like they feel so kind of just, there's so much shit glommed together that you learn in a AAA game through tutorials and there's systems and currencies and menus and stuff that like, what do you show off from a game? Like what portion of a game do you show off to sort of lead with the right foot? Like Forspoken had a demo and that did the thing we were talking about of that probably ended up hurting that game, if anything. Because it kind of just dropped players in and without like a frame of reference of, not that once you had them, the game was great, but without the frame of reference of where the story came from or sort of slowly doling out the mechanics, it kind of just dropped you in and you were kind of.
Well, that's the trouble, isn't it? I mean, this was the case with Shareware and with certain demos and like first 20 minutes of gameplay demos where it always like shows you the really impressive stuff at the very start, but the what you really need to know to get the skinny on the game is the meat of it, which would usually you'd only have an appreciation for in like the back half once everything was settled in and tutorialized and the repetitive gameplay loop had kicked in. I mean, I think Hogwarts Legacy was quite interesting for the first couple of hours, but then it settles into gear grinding, copy pasted, checklisting across the map bollocks. And I could see it really turning off a lot of players who got drawn in by the first few hours.
Yeah, that's, I mean, to me, a good demo does not necessarily equate an incredible final product. It's, for me personally, because we have to, there's so many games we have to cover and there's so many things we have to pick and choose from. I like going through either something like Steam Next Fest or right now there's a, like a, sort of a story-based Next Fest-ish thing called Ludo Narracon that's going on that I have a bunch of demos of, and being able to play 10 to 20 minutes of a game, and I can either be like, all right, I should keep this on my radar, or I could probably forget about this. That's just really helpful with curating the, you know, glut of hundreds, if not thousands, of games that are released on Steam every week, especially in the indie space.
That's why it's smart to get an indie publisher, I suppose. So they can worry about
it. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, like, if someone like, you know, Devolver or Annapurna, if they're publishing something, that always, like, clocks in my head. Like, okay, this is, you know, they're pretty good at being tastemakers, so this is probably worth paying attention to.
Yeah, that's curation.
Yeah, exactly.
What you're talking about there is curation. That's what you want.
Yeah. I wonder if also, there have been times where a demo has been released and somehow, because I have no idea how any of this technology actually works, people have data mined the demo and pulled all sorts of stuff from the finished game. Pokemon stopped doing demos. Because
there are multiple classic cases of people accidentally releasing the whole game as a demo, with it just requiring a little like fiddle about in the code to unlock it.
Yeah, really wild. Pokemon, I think like maybe it was Sword and Shield or one of those games where like almost the entire generation, like all the entire new Pokemon list leaked because like people were able to fiddle with stuff and just be like, oh, here's the rest of the game.
I mean, I've thought about this with relation to my game, Star Trek Vagabond. It would be very easy to accidentally release the entire game as a demo because a lot of it's a procedural game.
Oh, okay.
So all the stuff's already there. It's just like being assembled on the launch pad, as it were.
Yeah.
And all I could do is like just strip out all the story cutscenes, and I really couldn't be asked.
Yeah, and then you're, I don't know, with a game like, with a game that's sort of, choice-driven, decision-driven, story-driven, like, what do you release from it? Do you just start at the beginning? Do you have, here's the first hour, here's an interesting chunk from the middle? Like, it seems like the best-case scenario is those demos we talked about that are their own singular things, but that, for a small team especially, that seems like it would be take up too much time, too much resources that could be pointed towards the finished product.
Well, a lot of studios have very big teams, and maybe like if some people have less to do at certain points of development, they could be working on some fun aside thing instead of making the Red Dead Redemption horse's testicles shrink in cold weather, which I presume is the other thing they get them on when they've got bugger all else to do. Anyway, shall we go?
I would have noticed that if they had not talked about it.
Oh, well, quite. Shall we go super chats?
We can't. Oh, my gosh. There's so many super chats.
I know. I want to get started on them.
People are being incredibly super.
Starting with Eric Cartman, who gives $5 and says, it seems like the decline in demos is the inevitable result of the ship now, patch later culture that has become the norm for AAA publishers. Well, quite. I mean, early access has sort of taken over from demos as a practice, and that's literally like cards on the table. That's just outsourcing your QA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're seeing that with Darkest Dungeon 2 is finally coming out of early access next week. You know, and that's a game that you could have just been playing on the Epic Store for however long, and seeing as it evolved, you know, Hades was the same way, so.
Yeah, I'm very glad I waited till the official release to play Hades.
Same.
I'm sure it was a bit janky in the lead-up.
Yep.
Amr Yasser gives 25 AEDs. Arab Emirates Dinarii, I think?
Sounds right.
To say, one, what do you think about the idea of a game with a single big boss fight rather than a boss rush? Two, what do you think of Unrecord game that's blowing up?
Do you want to start with the first one or the second one?
I'm not entirely sure what they're talking about. Are you saying like a game with just like one big boss fight at the end rather than multiple boss fights?
No, I think they're saying like, what if the game was... So you have a game like Shadow of the Colossus or something that is ostensibly a boss rush. What if the entire game was one giant boss? Like, ultimately, I think the game would have to be short.
I mean, it'd be interesting to think about. I mean, you could argue something like Prey 2006 was that, because the whole game is set on this giant living spaceship.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends what you define, how you define a boss fight, I suppose.
Yeah.
I mean, if it was just like one dude with like a million billion health points and you just have to chip away at them for like 16 hours, I can't see that being much fun.
I don't know how fun that would be. But it'd be interesting to try to figure out how to, in a single encounter, how to add enough variety and intrigue and ebb and flow to it to create like a...
Well, I suppose you could take an approach kind of like Breath of the Wild, where you could take on the boss as a whole straight away, or you could bugger off to like different parts of the map and do like special side things that would knock big chunks off their health bar.
Yeah, if it was almost like...
So if you could be on like a giant dude, you could immediately start chipping him in the eyeballs, or you could like run down to like an acupressure point on his hand And
like if Calamity Ganon in Breath of the Wild were like a giant beast you could climb, and but then each of his limbs were like Voltron of the divine beasts, and so you can either go to his head and fight him, or you can take out his elephant arm or his camel leg.
And then if you do that, the final boss is just a dude with no arms or legs, just lying on the ground.
Yeah, complaining. It's like the end of Demon's Souls. Yeah, perfect.
There you go.
I think we just made it. Do you know what Unrecord is?
I do not know what Unrecord is.
Unrecord is a game that blew up last week because the trailer was released. I'll put the link here in the chat. And it is a first-person body cam.
Oh, yes, I did hear about this. I'm seeing it on Steam now. It's a very, very realistic-looking game.
Yes, where it's like you are a cop and it's all viewed through this kind of fisheye body cam camera. And it mostly I think people were, well, there was the two things people were talking about were, A, people are like you're going to make a body cam game and you're probably not going to handle it super well. And B, it was, this looks super realistic. Is this fake? Like, is this real, or is some of this live action footage? Because it does look really good.
Yeah, it looks really good. I'd be interested to see.
It doesn't look interesting, but it looks good.
No. Well, I'd want to see what the full game they're planning to do with it. Yeah, you can see it's a game. Some of the aspects of the animation give it away.
Yeah. That was blowing up on Twitter, and we covered it a couple times, and those stories did really well. So, yes, Unrecord.
Well, yes, that's as I said, I'm doing an extra punctuation soon on the subject of how realistic graphics aren't that great, and that they're becoming kind of a albatross around the neck of the games industry, and perhaps that's something that needs reassessment. But we'll get to that when we get to that.
I completely agree with you.
Darkgroove86 gives €5 and says, "Yats, if it's okay to ask, I'm very curious, how many books have you sold, and which one sold best?" I don't know, Darkgroove86. You need to ask my accountant.
Do you know which one sold the best? Or do you have a feeling which one's most popular?
I'm not entirely sure. I want to say Galaxy for Food has the most reviews on Audible, whatever that means. For whatever that's probably worth.
That's a decent mile marker, I would say.
I guess. This feels almost a little crass to ask that question. I mean, it feels like asking someone how much they earn in a year.
Well, preface it with, is it okay to ask?
Well, I suppose, but I think it's an American thing. Like, a lot of Americans don't really flinch at asking someone how much they earn in a year. And
that's pretty weird. I think it's pretty weird.
From a British perspective, that just feels like a little personal. Like
a little nosy. It feels weird.
Why do you need to know that? Are you Are you gathering information to dox me or something?
Yes. This is all a long con to dox you.
Okay. CorpseFire 14. Welcome to Early Access.
Speaking of long cons, remember everyone in Early Access and Patreon can watch Frost's latest cold take, which is on this very topic.
Yeah, and we didn't know that.
I feel like Frost should have been on this episode instead of me.
Oh, well.
We've done goofed.
Now, whenever I stream with Frost, people complain about the two voices are too smooth. People are alternately falling asleep or having orgasms.
little column A, little column B.
Gary Davis gives £5. And says, in response to last week's comment, Google Nolf Revival, presumably No One Lives Forever, that wonderful legal loophole means I get to play it on my Steam Deck, and it's sublime. Yeah, last week we were saying how No One Lives Forever isn't getting re-released because it's in, like, property rights hell. Hang on, I'll just check that out. Oh yeah, Nolf Revival.
But they just released it.
Don't you just hate when they embed music on a web page? Who the fuck still does that?
What is this? This GeoCity web ring?
I know. This really does look like a fucking GeoCities page.
Yeah, we both clicked on the same page.
Yeah. Yeah, you download... Well, it's... well, you say revival, it just seems like classic abandonware situation to me. You can just,
yeah,
you can't buy it anymore, so here's a free version to download.
No one's going to sue us.
There you go.
Yeah, Nick, that was really loud. Even Nick got jump scared by the No One Lives Forever revival.
Oh, could you hear that? Yeah, I suppose. It's just pumping out my speaker audio. Anyway, good soundtrack, No One Lives Forever, actually. You just got a brief demo of it just then, so maybe you should check that out. Alex Armstrong gives $2 and says, screw demos, why can't freeware come back? Because people need to be paid, Alex Armstrong, is the thing. Yeah. People will kind of like some money.
Yeah. Bring back, if we bring back or bring universal basic income.
Oh, further down it says, sorry, I meant to say shareware. Okay.
Oh.
Because shareware was that thing that they were doing on with PC games in the mid to late 90s, where you'd pay for like a little chunk of the game. Mm-hmm. Like in the case of Quake, it was like the first episode. And Speaking of 3D was the first episode of 3. And then if you liked it, you'd send a bit of money to someone and they'd send you the rest of the game. So functionally very similar to demos, but you'd get more of the game. I think that's the main difference. But it was called shareware because you were expected to just share that first chapter as much as you liked.
Was it when you said send it money to someone and they'd send you the rest of the game, like, would that be digitally or physically?
Physically. They'd send you discs in like the mail. Crazy, right?
This is weird. What a time. I was just playing Riven. That was the only game I was playing at the time.
Yeah, I don't think there was a shareware version of Riven.
No, there was just several discs of Riven.
That's another thing we need to talk about. Is like that was a comparison I brought up in my draft for like the extra punctuation about realistic graphics. Because when CDs first came about, they had way too much storage space for how big games were at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, classic point-and-click adventure games, it was like these games were originally released on floppy disk. There was like 30 meg at most. So suddenly it became very important just to fill all that space on the disk, even if it wasn't strictly necessary. And thus was born the FMV era.
Yes. Thank you, Square.
Filling up the disk with shitty FMV cutscenes for literally no reason except that the space was there. And the tech corporations needed to incentivize people to want the most advanced tech.
Yeah,
that's literally the only reason they did it, and it's also literally the only reason games are still obliged to have realistic cutting-edge graphics, even if they don't strictly need it.
I wrote a piece recently about how I kind of miss changing discs in games. Like, as a kid, they were big. It felt like they were important.
Yeah,
like,
I guess
this
what
wasn't
you
mean. Just a video game, Mom. This is a Final Fantasy VII.
God, I remember having to do that for Resident Evil 4. I think that's the last time anyone ever did that was with Resident Evil 4, because the GameCube insisted on having those little tiny baby discs.
Now, the apparently physical games still come on multiple discs, but they're just, some of them are just like, here's a download disc. You got to put this disc in, download a bunch of shit, and then put the other disc in.
Yeah, I mean, half of them are just download codes if you buy them like retail these days. There's a download code in a box.
I liked Metal Gear Solid 1. Had a disc change at a specific point. And then in Metal Gear Solid 4, there's the chapter where you revisit it, and at that same point, Otacon wants you to change the disc, but then he's like, oh no, we're playing on a dual-layered Blu-ray.
He's a strange man, that Hideo Kojima.
I love him. I thought you were going to say Otacon. I was like, yes, he is a strange man.
Well,
my God.
He's also a strange man. That's probably why Hideo Kojima kept putting him in his games.
Yeah, he's just always falling in love, always banging out. Kind of new Otacon.
And then the person he falls in love with dies. That's how it always works.
That's rough. Maybe his wiener's cursed.
Did you find the optional conversation in Metal Gear Rising Revengeance in which they follow up on that, incidentally?
No. People were talking about that on our stream. I don't think we found it on our stream.
There's an optional conversation with Sunny where Raiden asks after Otacon, asks how he's doing. And apparently he's become a major player in his middle age.
I can see that.
Like a new lady home every Saturday night, but he keeps keeping them at arm's length because they keep dying on him. Anyway, Daniel TH gives $5 and says, hope you're all having a fantastic day. Here's some money for you all to enjoy whilst I get back to studying for my finals. You do that, Daniel TH.
Also, good luck on your finals. I think
get yourself an important qualification that will in some way help. I mean, I'm a high school dropout and look at me now, but I ain't judging anyone else for pursuing the path of higher education.
There you go.
Anyway, scavenger, $10. My wife is a maths graduate, and that certainly comes up a lot when she has to count all the dirty nappies she changes.
Ah.
Just kidding, my love. Scavenger gives $10 and says, you commented games with demos would front-load content, leaving everything after the demo lacking. How do you not front-load it without it just be the first hour of a normal game? Well, there are plenty of examples of demos that were a sort of more sort of vertical slice thing that was from the middle of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Which is probably which is tricky because you still have to tutorialize all the mechanics and stuff. I mean, that's probably why Half-Life did Uplink, which was basically the spirit of the game, if not an actual chunk of the game. It was just sort of a proof of concept, a little rundown of the major themes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's unless you're going to build something from scratch, it's tough to just kind of find a small chunk from a middle of a game that works well.
Yeah.
Without prior knowledge.
Without having to get bogged down in introducing stuff.
Yeah, like I wouldn't even know with certain games, like, I don't know, do FromSoft games really have demos? Like, I don't, like, what would you, for like Dark Souls?
A lot of the hands-on and hands-off, actually, demos I've seen at E3 and GDC would be like mid-game stuff. Like, yeah. That was the case with Doom Eternal, I seem to recall. They just have a quick bespoke tutorial and then chucked you right into it.
Yeah. It's and I remember I think it was Dark Souls 2, the sort of the press demo tossed you in just a boss fight, like midway through the game. It was like the Mirror Knight. And like everyone was just getting roasted because you're like you haven't even like given people time to acclimate to how Dark Souls 2 feels different than Dark Souls 1, and you're just like throwing them at a boss fight, which in a series that is, you know, hard to begin with.
Alex Armstrong gives $2 and says, thanks for retweeting my poacher post yesterday. You're welcome, Alex Armstrong. I'm always one to retweet anything that references my shit.
What's a poacher?
It's a freeware game I made way back in the day.
Oh. Was it about a poacher? Like an animal poacher?
Yeah, but in the sort of the slightly quaint sense of like the Danny the Champion of the World sort of poacher who was just like stole a deer from the grounds of a wealthy lord.
Gotcha.
As the gamekeeper shakes their fist in fury. Oh, you wily poachers. not like the sort of animal poacher you get in like South Africa who like steal tusks from rhinos and shit.
Yeah, and elephant trunks.
Yeah. Anyway, Abdel Corrales gives $220. It says, will your game have a demo, Yahtzee? It's got an early access alpha build that's available to download on itch.io, if that's your thing. As I say, it would be hard to release a demo of its current state without also releasing basically the whole game.
Mm-hmm.
But we discussed that earlier. HJorth87 gives 50 Danish kroner and says, you did well on Danish challenge. Equals was correct. That's not gonna make sense without the text, is it? But you sounded more Swedish. Loved demo CDs in the old computer magazines. Played ton of A Bridge Too Far. Oh, Swedish, Danish, what's the difference? It's all, you know, Baltic Sea, Scandinavian people.
All ish.
Backpack gives $2 and says, who's the youngest and oldest of the escapist team? Ooh.
Amy's the youngest, I believe.
Amy's, is it Amy or Jermaine who's the youngest?
I think Amy's younger than Jermaine.
You think?
Yeah.
Well, neither of us know their names off the top of our heads, I think.
I know Amy, Jermaine, Frost, and Nick are all in their 20s.
Yeah, I think the oldest might be Jack.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty old, and I know he's older than me.
Yeah. So there you go.
Not by very much, though.
No.
So there you go. Not a particularly interesting answer, but you asked for it. And then Alex Armstrong comes back with $2 and says, shouldn't demos be free? Looking at you, Crash 4.
Yeah, another thing they do now a lot is like, oh, you can get the demo only if you pre-order the game, which is...
sort of defeating the point, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I want to pre-order the game. I haven't played the demo.
Exactly. Yeah, I think I think demos should be free. But if you're not going to be free, they should come with the purchase of another game. Like I do like the like we mentioned before, you buy Zone of the Enders and then get Metal Gear Solid 2 demo.
Yeah, yeah.
With it,
which you know, is sort of skating on the edge for me of paying for a demo.
Sure.
Sorry, I'm a little distracted because a little bit further down, Fate. Spelled with a Y, says, you would think so, but Forsaken had a demo. And I think he's trying to... He means Forspoken. And that suddenly made me wonder, was the game always supposed to be called Forspoken? Because that's not a very good word. And it feels like maybe at some point it wanted to be called Forsaken, but it turned out that had been already taken by something.
Yeah, that was a game. I don't think I ever played it, but I remember there was like a girl and a tattoo on the cover.
Yeah, because Forsaken makes a lot more sense for the plot of Forspoken as well.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure what Forspoken means at the moment.
I was about to say, I never finished the game, but do they explain what it means?
I don't think they did. I think that might have been a case of having to slightly change the title from the one they actually wanted. Similar thing happened, incidentally. If you ever read, DC Vertigo comics from the 90s, when they started the John Constantine series of comic book series, they called it Hellblazer.
Yeah,
and that was because they'd wanted to call it
Hellraiser.
Hellraiser, which is which is a perfect title for the John Constantine comic, except of course for the inconvenient fact that Hellraiser was already a thing.
And Clive Barker was coming from. Can't take Hellraiser's name. You can't get past old Clive.
And I think specifically because Hellraiser also had comics, so there was a conflict.
Mm.
Phil Myassup gives 100 Norwegian kroner. What's that look for? We like hearing from Phil Myassup.
I agree. You said it differently that time.
Okay. Phil Myassup gives 100 and says, I kind of think that where demos succeeded was letting you play a level which showcased the best of the game's features. Now publishers just need to hype a trailer to get you to pre-order. Or even
games
just
don't have levels anymore. Games don't have levels.
Yeah, I remember when like Half-Life had like seamless map design, and that felt revolutionary at the time.
Yeah,
because it didn't have specific. It had chapters. Every now and again, a chapter heading would come up.
Yeah,
but it wasn't like levels in the sense of like Quake 1, where you go from map to map, and there's a little result screen between each one.
Yeah, it was funny. You kept asking what chapter we were on in Half-Life 1. And A, I just didn't know because everything kind of runs seamless. And B, for some reason, in the resolution we were playing it in, the font was so small.
Yeah.
So we'd get to a new chapter and it'd be like, what's going on there?
That's what happens when you play old games, isn't it? On old like new resolutions. I mean, when Half-Life came out, people were still playing in 640 by 480.
Yeah.
Possibly even smaller, thinking about it.
What's the last good game with levels? I guess a lot of indie games still have levels.
Yeah, yeah. Like Celeste or Neon White.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, Neon White. Great game with levels.
Richard Wells gives $5 and says, my fondest demo memory was playing Myst on a Mac LC575 at a computer store. You could only walk around the library, but my Myst love affair was born. Myst was one of those games that was selling itself on the really good art and which has kind of aged like milk in the modern age.
But man, at the time, Yogi.
It's another case of CDs are now a thing. Now we can just pack the game full of really pretty art and pointlessly high quality audio.
And FMVs of an old man pretending he's a wizard who's clearly not an actor
and is trapped in a book.
Classic.
Scavenger gives $5 and says, a pox on time-locked demos. You get 1 hour to play this, then it's locked forever, or when the game is out, this is delisted. CRE Village.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not really fair on people who are shittier at the game, isn't it?
the time-locked ones made sense when demos were part of a kiosk at a store, because that was kind of a way to, if there was a line, like, your time is up kind of thing. I remember playing, I think like a month before the N64 was released in the US, they had kiosks available at Toys R Us. And it was like a small, probably 5 to 10 minute chunk of Mario 64, just the opening of Mario 64. Outside the castle, run into the castle, you can go to the first world. Like, just wrecked my brain forever. Like, it was the most impressive thing I've ever seen. It was like I saw the face of God.
Yeah. It's funny how it's less impressive once it's actually at home on your own computer.
Yeah.
Sort of the some of the mystique is lost.
Yeah.
John Connor gives $5.50 and says, Redfall just came out today. Will the multiplayer game going to get a ZP? Well, I'll be playing it single player mode. And incidentally, that's always an immediate red flag for me these days when a game says, when it's clearly got some kind of co-op focus, but the game says, it's equally fun to play in single player. It will not be. Spoiler alert, it will not be. I would like to play a game single player, like from start to finish, and at the end of it say, boy, what a great single player game. And then for the game to go, you could have played it co-op, incidentally. And I'm like, shut up. I would never have guessed.
See, they need to do that. Do a little Shyamalan twist.
Because every time something's got a multiplayer focus, you can tell.
Yeah. Incidentally, so the game comes out at midnight and the review embargo has not dropped yet, which is a bad sign. But also someone, I believe, broke embargo and published their review for a little bit, and it was very low. And they said it's one of the worst AAA games in years.
So. I've been hearing smatterings on the old insider grapevine along very similar lines.
Which is surprising, because Arkane generally doesn't, you know.
Fuck up.
No, yeah. Like, even stuff that you're not, like, crazy about is still interesting or at least good.
Yeah, what was the last thing? Deathloop.
Yeah, Deathloop Parade.
It was certainly interesting. Yeah, wonder what happened. But, you know, I'm probably going to play that tomorrow, so let's not prejudge.
We would never.
Maybe, like, a single day will be enough time to patch out whatever people are complaining about.
Patch in a new game. One character has control over a bird, and I think that's neat. I want to be that character who can send a bird after people.
What, like in the latter Assassin's Creed games?
But you could never use your bird as an attack. Your bird was just like a scoping up a joint, right? Really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure at least one of the... Because there's been several. There's been several Assassin's Creed games where you have a bird friend. Because I think Ubisoft were going through a sort of drone fetish phase.
Sure, no.
Because, you know, all their other games had drones in them. Watch Dogs, Rainbow Six, Ghost Recon. Mm-hmm. So they had to invent some kind of historical drone equivalent, and that's what they settled on.
What were birds, starting in the original drones?
Starting in Assassin's Creed Origins, I think, but I'm pretty sure Valhalla had one as well. And I'm all but certain that at least one of those games had let you attack things from your bird.
What if your bird died?
Actually, exactly the same thing was... Actually, you definitely could in Far Cry Primal. Because in lieu of drones in that, you had like an owl friend or something like that, and they could drop bombs. I distinctly remember you could drop bombs from your owl friend in Far Cry Primal.
What kind of bombs?
Well, like, Stone Age bombs.
I don't even know what that means! Incredible.
Scavenger gives $5 and says, I suspect the idea of the demo might be tied to the free-to-play game. Get you hooked, then go after your money to get the real fun experience. Well, it's possibly, but not quite so blatantly evil.
Yeah. I don't think all free-to-play games are evil.
Well, a lot of them are.
I think a lot of them are.
Because, you know, that's the entire business model.
That's true.
Gelden Yetich, member for 16 months in Tip Jar. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Gelden.
Mark Davis gives £2 and says, which recent indie demo impressed you? Well, it's not... Well, I wouldn't say demo, but I'll tell you a recent indie early access game that impressed me. Shadows of Doubt.
Yahtzee playing early access?
I know, crazy, right? In fact, I'm probably going to do a review of it, even while it's still in early access, because I like it so much.
incredible.
There you go.
Aside from Viewfinder, which I mentioned, Frost pointed me in the direction of a game called Valley Peaks. Played the demo of last week. Loved it. It is a first person, a cozy climbing game where you play as a frog. The visuals have a short hike vibes, but the climbing is fucking maybe my favorite climbing in any game ever.
Cozy
you just
climbing,
a frog and you're just climbing up a mountain first person and it just feels great.
Is it free climbing in the sort of Mount Your Friends sense where you move the hands individually?
You move the hands individually. You have to attach them to specific like nodes.
Right, yeah. I played a game at GDC that was along very similar lines, and I keep forgetting what it's called.
Was it this? Valley Peaks? Were you a frog?
No, it was like a one-word title. It's on one of the GDC videos, so someone will know.
Okay.
But yeah, like the climbing sims where you control your limbs individually and grab onto things is increasingly a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably another thing we probably won't see in AAA games because it's very easy to fuck up the physics. And
yeah.
Your character just sort of spins around and around in a really stupid way that would really probably sort of ruin the tone of something like Uncharted.
Oh, sure. And it works in this game, even though like if you stop to think about it, you're like, what's happening with this frog's arms? Like, are his arms broken? How is this possibly happening?
I guess it would be interesting to see now I'm talking about it. If they had like a AAA game with that sort of climbing mechanic in like full on realistic graphic style. Because I've done indoor rock climbing. I'm a big fan of it. And it's as much in your legs as it is in your arms.
What's the last game to do something interesting with climbing? Breath of the Wild?
In the sense that you could climb anywhere, I suppose. Not so much in the climbing mechanic itself, which was just hold down a button and press up.
Well, there was kind of the, like, charting your surfaces, seeing if you could find a little ledge to kind of wiggle yourself into so that you can regain stamina.
Yeah, I guess there was a little more nuance
fear
to
of
it.
Rain. Yeah. It wasn't crazy deep, but
no.
A little bit.
Because I'd get to see a game that really simulates the actual challenge of rock climbing, which is, you know, all in grip strength and assuring your center of gravity is planted before you continue. Palash T, $4.99, says, most egregious example of the shareware demo problem. All the good stuff is in the demo, rendering the full game a waste of time. I would argue the original Quake 1 had that. First episode's great. It ends with a boss fight. None of the other episodes end with a boss fight. I want to say the original Blood as well. Feels like the first episode is the one with all the good ideas, like the moving train level and the carnival level. And everything else just sort of goes through the motions a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, that could be like a real misleading if like they release a single level of a shooter. You're like, oh, this is incredible. Look at all these cool ideas. And the rest of the levels feel either half-baked or vanilla compared to it. Like a game like, I think we brought up last week, Titanfall 2. That'd be a game like, what level do you even release? Because levels feel very different in that game. Like the levels with the prefab neighborhoods feels very different than the cause and effect, which feels very different from jumping from airship to airship.
Captain Loin gives $10 and says, sometimes demos might not be an accurate or complete portrayal of the game. See Brutal Legend, Wonderful 101. One lied about its genre, the other didn't give you the tools you needed to understand it. Yeah, Brutal Legend takes you a while to get into that before the real-time strategy elements creep in. Though in my experience, I found that the best way was to just sort of only half-heartedly employ the real-time strategy mechanics and just do most of the work yourself.
Yeah.
By running over all the enemy units in your big car.
Yeah, I'm not an RTS fan, and I still found those relatively easy to get through. Like, I get that it was kind of marketed as, like, this is going to be like Double Fine doing Zelda, but with heavy metal and hell.
Wonderful 101 was a really great creative concept, but just was so bad at explaining how you were supposed to play it.
Yeah. It
has a lot of defenders.
It
has a lot of defenders amid people who took the time to actually figure it out.
Yeah. It was also, that weird thing of it releasing on Wii U originally.
Yeah.
A small audience and an audience that might not have been looking for something like that. Like,
yeah,
like
the
Wii
crossover,
wasn't where
Venn,
I thought
the crossover of the Venn diagram wasn't very big.
Yeah, of deep you know, the character action spectacle fighter with the Wii U.
Alex Armstrong gives $2 and says, FMV, one of the major reasons why Sega CD failed. Well, quite, Alex Armstrong. That's a perfect case of what I was talking about, of how they were trying to push the advanced tech, even though the games didn't strictly need it. So they had to just invent reasons to have a CD, mm-hmm. rather than have games that genuinely needed them, needed that remember, amount of space.
Remember Night Trap?
I remember it very well.
Yeah.
I remember
it was
quaint the,
that was like a cultural, oh no, like
I know. Pearl it was Clutch really, moment. And it was really weird how that was the game that attracted the controversy as opposed to something like Phantasmagoria, which is actually does have a whole lot of really upsetting gore and an actual rape scene.
Strange.
Then again, that was a PC game. And PC games sort of scooted by unnoticed during that whole period because they managed to escape the kiddie game attachment that a lot of consoles have.
Yeah, I mean, Night Trap was like, oh, the box you play Sonic the Hedgehog on has a voyeurism simulator.
I mean, I guess people talk shit about Doom when it came out because of all the violence and satanic imagery, but there have been plenty of ultra-violent games on PC before then. Even something outwardly kind of innocent like Space Quest would be full of these just incredibly gory death scenes.
Yeah,
just because there was literally no standard for anything at that point, and people were just pissing about. Eitor Urubari gives 450 ARS, God knows, and says, "Hi guys, first of all, happy International Workers' Day." Ooh, that's
fuck
me.
Are
isn't
we doing
it?
Working?
I count as an international worker because I'm an expat.
Also, Argentine pesos. Apparently.
Oh, there you go. What would you say is the best demo you have played, or the one that best showed the essence of the full game? Mine would be Stanley Parable.
Stanley Parable was a good example of a demo that was about demos, which is very fitting for a game like that.
I guess I'll just cheap out and bring up Half-Life Uplink again.
Yeah, the three that stand out to me that I mentioned earlier, Metal Gear Solid 2 that came with the Zone of the Enders, Tony Hawk that came with a personal pan pizza, and PT, if that counts as a demo.
There you go. When you said that came with a personal pan pizza, I immediately thought, wait, the game came with a pizza? Like if you go to the game shop, they just had a bunch keeping warm in the oven in the back.
Does it even be, how is this being reheated?
All the games gives 4.99 and says, I remember some older PC demos with timers. The demo was 30 minutes of full gameplay of Zuma or some elaborate bowling game. Timers for AAA demos? You know, this you've reminded me that every time I play like a hands-on demo at conventions and like game shows, there's usually a timer on my time with it because they gotta have time for other journos. Yeah. And I remember after I was like playing Amnesia the Bunker for an hour, I thought I was just sort of stumbling around fucking up a lot. But the dude came in when I was done and said, "You got a lot further in the game than most people I've seen." Which I guess illustrates the issue with skill gap when it comes to timed demos.
Yeah, because if your demo doesn't have the kind of onboarding that a game's opening generally has, it could be tough.
Okay, Alex Armstrong is $2 and says, Forspoken to attract and fascinate in chant. Okay,
chant
I mean, it's still a kind of a shitty title for a game.
Yeah.
And I still feel like they were probably wanted something like Forsaken, and that was just a sort of second choice.
It is mind-boggling to me that that game came out this year. I refuse to believe it.
It's pretty.
This year,
it's pretty bad looking to look at it.
Yeah. At least we're getting Zelda in a week. That's nice.
Well, yeah. Ideally, before then, for us reviewers.
It's not gonna happen. Bob, well, I guess. I think Bob and Nintendo's gonna be second out. The game did leak, though. Everyone, fucking bury your head in the sand. The game leaked.
Fucking Mario movie was like the entirety of the Mario movie was posted on Twitter. Did you see that?
That's really funny.
And because Twitter's such a shambles right now, it stayed up for ages.
Take it down.
Yeah. Anyway, Eitor Urubari gives 450 ARS and says, also apologizing for going off topic, my girlfriend wants to know if you have played Rain World, and if so, what are your thoughts on it? Please say you like it or I will sleep on the sofa. Well, I'm going to have to leave you in limbo there, Aitor Aribari, because I've never played it.
I've never played it either, but I've watched video essays on it, and it's one of those games that has, like, the world exists apart from you.
That's
I mean, do you know of Rain World? Like the
not like a, really. I guess the name rings a bell. Help
it's
me
a,
out.
It's like a 2D survival platformer where you play this little, like, slug cat thing in a really oppressive world. Visually, kind of, it looks a little bit like Celeste, like a darker Celeste.
Okay.
But like the flora and fauna and weather of the world have impacts on everything, even removed from you. So like things are happening without your character being present.
I've been kind of cynical about that as a selling point. I remember when they were talking up the Elder Scrolls Oblivion, and they were like, these characters are doing shit even while you're not looking at them. And I'm like, well, what's the fucking point then?
Yeah.
I mean, you could just...
I don't care about the other side of the map, they're going to bed. That doesn't matter to me.
Yeah, I feel like all that's going to happen is that I'm going to show up at some weird hour because I turn in a quest and someone will be in bed and I'll have to drag them out and it'll be a huge pain in the ass.
I think that works in a smaller, denser space. Like, I like it in Majora's Mask when it's like everyone's on a set schedule, and if it's 2 a.m.
Well, this was the whole premise behind the virtual theater system that Revolution Software introduced in their old point-and-click adventure Lure of the Temptress. And that was a huge pain in the ass as well, because I'd be looking for the one dude I'd need to solve a fucking puzzle, and he'd be across town and nobody could tell me where he was. By the time I got there, he'd like moved back to the place where I'd originally been.
That was called the virtual theater system?
Yes, created by Revolution Software for their game Lure of the Temptress, and which they later used in their more well-known game Beneath a Steel Sky.
I know that game.
There you go. We found the connection. Don't mess with me when it comes to obscure adventure game trivia.
I would never.
Anyway, Wojtek, however you say that now.
Wojtek, the bear. $5. You want to talk about that bear again? Remember that bear?
No, let's not get sidetracked by the bear again.
Wojtek.
Speaking of Assassin's Creed, do you think Assassin's Creed Mirage, going back to basics, will be better than Odyssey, Valhalla, etc., or more of the same? Anything I would say would be useless, pointless speculation, Wojtek. So I'm ashamed of you for even trying to encourage it out of us. But as I said in an extra punctuation not too long ago, anything that you hear about a AAA game at this point, especially ones from Ubisoft, may not well be the case by the time they actually release the fucking thing, so that it is pointless to discuss it.
As someone who thought Odyssey and Valhalla got too big, I don't mind the game trying to rein it in.
Yeah, but we don't know what they even mean when they say they're going to rein it in and go back to basics.
100%.
So we'll just have to wait for it to come out so we can see. Doran Grossman Naples gives $2 and says, why do some people furiously defend free-to-play games? So sunk cost fallacy, I think, Doran Grossman Naples. Thanks for your question.
I think it... Well, is it furiously defend them, or I don't know, was that in response to me saying not all free-to-play games are free? Because I don't think that first...
I don't know. People do furiously defend things that they've sunk a lot of money into because of sunk cost fallacy.
Well, I think admonishing them wholesale, I'm against that, because I think the literal free nature of them opens them up to such a massive audience that otherwise might not be able to play games if it's a monetary thing.
And then uses asshole Skinner Box game mechanics to sucker them in like the fucking pigeons in the Skinner Box. And then exploit them for money for the rest of time.
If you're able to just go and enjoy yourself, I like going to a bookstore just to walk around. I don't have to buy anything.
And everyone who works there thinks you're a dick.
No. I buy myself a nice coffee. I knock over books. I find a copy of your book and I put it in the bestsellers.
Yeah, we almost did that when we were in Milwaukee. We went to a bookstore and we found some of mine and we was like, do you want to sign it? And I kind of chickened out. Because, you know, I mean, I guess if you just find a randomly signed book in a bookstore, how would you even verify that it was the original author that signed it, is the question.
I like opening up collections of Shakespeare and signing it. Billy Shakes.
Yes. To my darling Candy. Anyway, Gelden Yetich gives $5 and says, I think Shareware had the best model. Release the core engine for free with some content, then sell more content for it if the player wants more.
Shareware.
It's not so easy these days because content brings with it all those additional assets and things.
Also, people would just data mine it and figure out how to unlock the full game.
Alex Armstrong gives $2 and says, thoughts on demo CDs like PlayStation Underground? Never Love played them. That one, but the one I always appreciate when I think back to it was the old couple of cases that PC Gamer used to do where they'd have a demo CD that wasn't just a menu with games on it, but a whole like fully made game in itself. Usually like a first-person Myst-style adventure game where you'd walk around an environment and interact with things, and that's how you'd discover the demos, and that you'd have conversations with characters, and it was a whole thing.
I think that's neat. Let's go back to that.
Yeah, although I don't expect they did it very often.
Especially and I feel like if I just wanted to play one specific part of it, I'd be like, oh, get this fucking... Why do I have to go through this? Just give me a menu.
And if you did it on a monthly basis, it would probably be a massive pain in the ass for the probably a not terribly significant return on investment. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Wesley Thomas gives $220 Canadian, says, here's a toonie, caper for my amusement. Caper.
What's caper for my amusement?
Well, caper just means, you know, prance about.
Sure.
And I would normally have blown you off, but I've been a little concerned about Toffee's weight gain. Oh. I mean, look at that jowly face. Look at how much you can pinch. Look at that big chonker. You can get like a fistful of flesh on his back. And it's true, he's been hanging around the kids' high chair too much, grabbing scraps.
Hoovering up whatever falls.
And the kids think it's terribly amusing to deliberately throw stuff down to him.
It is very funny.
He's getting more strictly observed during mealtimes and slightly smaller dinners for a while, aren't you, you big chubster?
Oh, poor Toffee.
Don't say poor Toffee.
Oh,
I mean, if he had the slightest impulse in his head that would tell him he had eaten too much, he wouldn't be in this situation. No, even like, even fat as he is, he'll like go around the kitchen licking crumbs off the floor all afternoon if we let him.
He wants to help clean. Great job, Tuffy. You're doing great.
I wish he could do a job in a way that would mean he got some bloody exercise. Where was I? I lost my place. So hang on.
Cornish Cream Tea, I believe.
Ah, yes. Cornish Cream Tea 07 gives $5 and says, the European PS1 demos had such great menu select screens and music, puts modern games to shame. Anyone remember Underwater that came with the PS1? I didn't.
I don't. PS1 Underwater. There's a game called Treasures of the Deep. Maybe it's that.
I'm not sure that's what he's talking about.
I don't know. Incredible.
That was the last super chat. Well, that caught me off. Caught me a little off guard. Kind of assumed there'd be more. What a disappointment you all are. Yeah, we're just at the point where everyone's complimenting Toffee on him being a little chunky boyo. Well,
also, thanks. According to Nick, welcome to Patreon, Old Naravern.
Okay.
I don't know, he just said that in the
welcome
chat.
To Patreon, Old Naravern. However you say that. Well, welcome. Thanks for listening to Slightly Something Else.
Yeah.
I was Yahtzee Grosher. I was joined by Marty Sleaver, as always, and the big chunky boyo you see before you. Toffee, I mean.
Roast.
And so I'll be back on Wednesday with Zero Punctuation, which is on the subject of Jedi Survivor. What else? Although I was playing the PS5 version, so I won't be roasting it for bugs like you might be expecting. I'll be roasting it for some other things.
By Wednesday, those are going to be patched out.
Well, that's a good thing I'm roasting it for other things then.
Oh, no!
Ha ha ha. You'll have to watch and find out what I found to dislike in Jedi Survivor. Rumble, and I've also got an extra punctuation dropping for everyone on YouTube. Took a moment to remember there.
Yeah, that'll be the nautical one, correct?
Yes, the one about ships and boats and stuff. What else we got coming up this week that I'm not to do with?
Oh my gosh. Hidden Gems tonight at 6 p.m. Central. Jesse and Casey are going to be playing a game called Meg's Monster. That looks very, it looks very nice. It looks very sweet. Tomorrow we'll have the recap, and Nick will be playing Redfall on stream for the Editor's Hour.
Fun.
Yeah, just all of our regular streams. Yeah, we got everything. We got more. We're out of Ravenholm. We're in our buggy now. How long are we going to be in this buggy?
Oh, you'll be in the buggy for a while yet. Okay. Did you just get out of Ravenholm?
No, we've been buggying around for a while. We had to stop at a couple places. There's like these, like there's a bunch of fucking tremors. Ant lions, I believe they're called.
Oh, okay. Well, they might be past the buggy bit then.
Okay. So we're still thoroughly enjoying the game. Let me tell you.
Half-Life I guess 2. You'll be looking forward to one of the game's few actual boss fights fairly soon. If you're in the buggy. If you're in the bit with bugs.
We are in the bit. We're in the buggy bug.
The beach bugs. The buggy
beach
bugs on the beach.
Oh, are you no, the buggy are you, bugs on the beach.
Are you bothering buggy bugs on the beach in your buggy?
Just going to throw up. And then you can check out Written-Wise. We have a ton of incredible stuff on the website, including I'm still chipping away every day at what will hopefully be an 18-part series on Zelda games. My fourth one is up on Link's Awakening, and my fifth one on Ocarina of Time should be up later today. I'm doing a short piece on something that stands out to me from each Zelda game, leading up to Tears of the Kingdom.
All right, then. And one final super chat from TomMix1199, who says, gives $5 and says, here's Toffee Snack Fund. Toffee. Well, no more snacks for this chunky boy-o.
Get him a snack.
Look at that
That'll
face.
Be a stretch goal. Snacks
look at
Toffee.
Look at that chubby, chubby face. Look at those jowls.
Very good, Charles.
He was licking my beard earlier because he was hoping there'd be crumbs in it. He can't stop.
Created a monster.
I'm just trying to give him body image issues so that he will be motivated by himself to become more svelte.
I think that's a bad. I think what you're doing is bad.
No one ever looked at a fat dog and said, that fat dog seems like he has a happy, active life.
This is true.
Well, anyway. Well, I guess that's it from us then.
Excellent.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
I got to take Toffee for a hopefully long walk.
Go a couple more times around the block. Just to be safe.
I guess I will.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.